others, but I ain't marching anymore. For I marched to the battles of the German trench in a war that was bound to end all wars. Oh, I must have killed a million men, and now they want me back again, but I ain't marching anymore. It's always the old to lead us to the wars, always the young to fall. Now look at all we've won with the saber and the gun. Tell me, is it worth it all? For I flew the final mission in the Japanese skies, set off the mighty mushroom roar. When I saw the cities burning, I knew that I was learning that I ain't marching anymore. Now the labor leaders screaming when they close the missile plant. United Fruit screams at the Cuban shore.
You're tuned in to listener-supported Community Radio,
KEOO. Community radio is a democratic type of media, but what does that mean? This fall drive, KEBU is examining what democracy means to each of us by featuring content focusing on picking apart democracy. To support our programs during this fall drive, go to kboo.fm and get the limited edition Sounds of Democracy shirt.
I'm Brian Curtis.
And I'm Wendy Ray. Welcome to Cool Solutions, stories of climate action from the bottom up.
It's October, time for our annual Halloween episode.
That means it's also our fourth anniversary. That's something to howl about.
So let's get cool.
Ooh! This Halloween, we don't need to bring in ghosts and zombies. Reality is scary enough. With global greenhouse gas reduction commitments adding up to a paltry 12% by 2030, when we need to be at 50%, things are not looking great for humankind.
But there are things we can do right where we live. I mean, there isn't anything closer to home than our actual homes, so today we're looking at communities working on banishing natural gas from houses and reanimating them with 100% clean electricity.
We're going to start this story by returning to the scene of a Cool Solutions episode we did back in 2018, where the Lajowski family in Redwood Valley, California, was rebuilding their home after a wildfire. Here's Mac Lajowski telling their story.
We were woken up by our next door neighbor who was pounding on our door and said, "The ridge is on fire." We looked out our back windows and it was moving rapidly. It came down the hill, crossed the river in the back of our yard. We had time to grab our photo albums, our kids, two dogs, two cats. We got out alive. Within a half hour, our house was dust.
We were there the following year, covering an innovative program helping families like the Lajowskis rebuild zero-carbon homes.
The Lajowskis' new home is all electric, with heating and cooling, hot water, stove, dryer, and electric vehicle charger, all powered by their rooftop solar and battery storage.
The program that made this possible is part of Sonoma Clean Power, a coalition of cities and counties who banded together to procure electricity that was cleaner and cheaper than that provided by their investor-owned utility.
Sonoma Clean Power's Advanced Energy Rebuild Program bundled together all the efficiency, clean energy, and electrification rebates that were available, so homeowners only had to complete one simple application.
4 years later, the program is just coming to an end.
This program has extended past our original time frame. We thought it would be a year, but no. We still have homes that are rebuilding from that fire in 2017, and we've had multiple fires since then.
That's Chad Assay, director of Sonoma Clean Power's new Advanced Energy Center.
The rebuild program was a smorgasbord of incentives, with enough resources to subsidize 1,200 zero-carbon homes. But in spite of the streamlined process, not that many folks came to the table, and many of those just had a nosh, not a meal.
Over 450 homes participated in that Advanced Energy Rebuild program, and about 30% are all electric.
So out of over 5,000 homes that were burned, only 135 rebuilt all electric.
That's barely a twitch of Frankenstein's pinky. The Rebuild program's experience was not unique. Despite their wide acceptance in other countries, Americans have yet to embrace highly efficient electric appliances. These poor, unloved appliances are ostracized by a fearful populace.
as we dug into this, we found three big barriers. The majority of our community does not know how they can combat the climate crisis in their own home. Customers do not know the most effective product that's out there. The second barrier was the contractor and the building community themselves. They don't know what to install, how to install it. They're not connected to the brands and the distribution sources. So it was the building community. And then the third barrier is financials. It really is more expensive most times for an energy efficient appliance over fossil fuel. In Europe and in Asia, the same appliances are a lot less expensive because of the demand and the supply that's there in those areas.
Sonoma Clean Power created a new program in response to these findings, the Advanced Energy Center.
Our mission is to turn the tide on the climate crisis, to reduce our GHG emissions as a community and to reduce our carbon footprint. And this is our goal. If you switch to all electric appliances, you're having the same carbon reduction as removing a car from the road.
Chad is enthusiastic, bordering on evangelistic.
This is one of the most important things that I've ever done in my life. Well, even when it was closed and someone is looking in the window, I'm pulling them in there and giving them a tour.
Since we're not there to be hauled in, Chad's giving us an audio tour.
It's in downtown Santa Rosa. It's a large 9,400 square foot space, an education center, an event center, and also a cooperative marketplace.
In exchange for negotiating a discounted price for Sonoma Clean Power customers, vendors of electric heat pumps, induction stoves, and water heaters have their products on display.
Whoa. Let's stop for a minute and explain what these things are. Heat pumps are basically reversible air conditioners that can move heat inside or out. They don't use much energy because they don't actually make any heat. They just compress and recirculate refrigerant. Induction stoves use electromagnets to create heat inside of the cookware. Since there are no flames or hot surfaces, very little heat escapes, which makes them highly efficient. At the Advanced Energy Center, you can play with all these things.
You can come and test, feel, and experience. We have multiple units that we can just switch and show the different comparisons side by side. I had a couple come in last week to tour the Advanced Energy Center. They already know about energy efficiency. They have another home that is a rental home, and they have induction cooktops in that home. However, they don't have induction in their own home because the gentleman had two hearing aids, and the induction cooktop that they had at their rental home emitted a sound that was unbearable for him, and he did not want that in his primary residence. So he and his wife were never going to invest in induction for their own home, even though they believed in the cause and they believed in the efficiency. So part of the process of the Advanced Energy Center is to allow people to experience the technology types. And we do have a demonstration kitchen with multiple brands of induction embedded into the island where people can test and experience the different induction stovetops. And both of the brands that we have there did not emit a sound to him. So he and his wife now had hope that there are brands that have evolved and don't have the same noise that the older brands did. And now they can invest in induction. There are customer-friendly classes. There are professional classes. We teach about all electrification. We teach about electric vehicles. And we teach in-depth classes about hydronic systems, heating and air conditioning.
And there's a welcoming facade and front window display to tempt people in the door.
It's difficult to get someone to want to come into a store just to look at water heaters. So we've strategically placed electric bikes, our switch vehicle, which is a program where we teach kids across our county on how to build and take apart electric vehicles. So it's a workforce development program. So we have some very attractive displays up front that bring people in the door. I will tell you that the most interest, the feedback we get the highest interest on is the induction stovetop. Everyone complains about switching from gas to electric. People just love to cook off of gas. They're used to fire. But when you come to the Advanced Energy Center and you experience the different technology types, the one that really stands out the most more than any other has been the induction. We have one display where you can just put your pot down anywhere on the surface and it automatically senses where it is and it automatically starts it up for that. And it's safe. You can have your hand right around it. We put candles next to it. We put ice cubes where we boiled water and it doesn't even melt. So it's very safe. It's extremely efficient. We have a time test there. We can show you exactly how fast it is compared to gas. A quart of water on induction can boil water in a minute and 20 seconds. And with gas, it can take sometimes 7.5 minutes. The speed is incredibly fast. I thought the battery storage or our e-bikes would be kind of the most popular, but it's been induction. This stovetop is 90% efficient. That means only 10% of the energy escapes out of the cookware. When you cook with gas or when you cook with an electric stovetop, you're only keeping 30% of the energy and 70% is escaping out into the air. But we have that caveman mentality where we must cook with fire and we must heat our homes with fire. And that needs to change.
For one thing, it's making us sick. Gas stoves frequently expose residents to hazardous indoor levels of nitrogen dioxide, a respiratory irritant that causes wheezing, reduced lung function, asthma attacks, emergency room visits, and hospital admissions.
Brett Singer studies indoor air quality at Lawrence Berkeley National Labs. He says cooking time and home size matter.
If I turn on my stove for 10 minutes to heat a pot of water, one burner for 10 minutes, and I live in a 2,000 square foot house, I'm not going to get to a hazardous level of nitrogen dioxide. But if I'm cooking a meal for my family of four, where I have two or three burners going for 20 minutes, half hour, 40 minutes, I could very easily get to those hazardous levels.
Nitrogen dioxide levels are especially high if you don't have or don't use your stove's vent or range hood every time you cook, if you put it on the lowest setting, or use the burners in the oven at the same time.
Another great reason to go electric is that smart electric appliances like heat pump water heaters, thermostats, and EV chargers can be controlled remotely to save electricity at times of high demand. This lowers the amount of clean energy we have to produce and prevents emissions from dirty gas peaker plants. Our Halloween show last year, Vampires Shut Down Power Plants, was all about that. I read recently that the number of smart residential appliances in the U.S. today is enough to function like a 10-gigawatt virtual power plant. The center is working to reach all segments of the community, from Spanish speakers to foodies.
Everything is in both languages. We have a team that evaluates and makes sure that all of our programs are equitable or have weight and prioritization to people in more need. We are in wine country, and moreover, we're the more food part of wine country. Induction is nothing new to the high-end food industry. A great example of that, we have the French Laundry, one of the top three American restaurants, and it's all induction. We're bringing in chefs who are cooking on induction and showcasing how to use induction, and we're going to have Spanish-speaking chefs, and we'll have a whole cultural menu.
Getting to that third barrier, cost, the center helps by acting as a one-stop shop.
We want to provide a place that customers can trust that they would go to for all financial savings. The term rebate never comes across too positively. People don't like to wait around for money. So as they show up at the Advanced Energy Center, we want to say that here are your savings for us in our programs here, but also there are these other local programs. And if we can fill out this paperwork, you can be eligible for all of these financial savings combined. In most cases, our appliances at the Advanced Energy Center are $0 for those who are low-income qualified. They still might not be able to afford that installation cost. So we've developed a 0% up to 10 years, $10,000 loan that they can put on their energy bill. And in most cases, these appliances are going to save you more than that in your energy bill.
Okay, I'm sold. I want a heat pump water heater. How do I get it?
We usually, if you want, say, a water heater or a furnace, you find a contractor and they give you a couple options. But that's not been working for this move to electric appliances.
The building community are really the salespeople for all of these appliance types. Contractors right now are so busy in our area, they don't have time to come and get involved in our programs, which is sad because the person who suffers is the customers, the customer that gets the bill at the end of the day. And they could have all of these discounts. And in some cases, they could have their equipment for free, but they just don't know that this is available. Without knowing how hard it is to install it, they assume it's extremely hard. And so we need to get the building community involved more.
In the meantime, the Advanced Energy Center has turned the buying process on its head. You go to the center and learn about your options. Then you go home and get on their website.
Choose for yourself what technology type will work for you. And then you'll be then connected to a list of contractors who are certified to install that. And you would pick the contractors you want. And you could pick multiple and request a bid. And then they can bid out the work to you, and they will flow down incentives and savings that we have pre-negotiated with the vendor. So you'll see the manufacturer discounts, and you'll see discounts from Sonoma Clean Power. And that way, customers can trust that they're getting the best knowledge on the technology types. They can trust that they're being connected with the best installers who can do it correctly. And then they can trust that they're getting the best financial incentives possible.
While Sonoma Clean Power's Advanced Energy Center is the first of its kind, judging by the interest it's attracting from around the state, I expect we'll see more popping up in the future.
You are listening to Cool Solutions, Tales of Climate Action from the Bottom Up. We're talking about some cool programs to electrify our homes and kiss our gas goodbye. California is also in the forefront of another bottom-up electrification strategy, making sure new homes are born electrified.
50 cities in California have banned natural gas hookups in new construction by adopting something called a REACH code. Amy Ryder is the local policy lead for the Building Decarbonization Coalition.
Most states have a baseline energy efficiency code for new construction. A REACH code, also known as a stretch code, depending on where you are in the country, is something that goes above and beyond that. Not all states have that option. Going to all electric new construction is really just a way to stop the bleeding, to stop expanding the gas infrastructure that continues to expand daily in this country. The goal is to eventually move away from fossil fuel use in buildings at large. But in order to get there, we have to stop digging the hole first.
New buildings are also a good place to start with electrification because building all electric from the get-go is much cheaper than retrofitting an existing home. The money you save by leaving out the gas connection and plumbing balances out the higher cost of electric appliances.
How do REACH codes happen?
I've seen it happen on a number of different levels. You have the REACH codes that are really advocacy-led. Could even be just one person in a town who is really passionate about the subject, who spends their time educating everyone around them. Could be staff trying to address their climate action planning goals at the city level of how do we actually reduce our greenhouse gas emissions.
Sometimes it's a city council person or a member of a city commission.
You have a champion, and that person talks to their friends, they talk to their coworkers, and they bring it forward as here's an idea. What this movement has really shown is that when you give a very clear pathway for achieving a goal that multiple people can get around for multiple reasons, then you can kind of provide that on-ramp. Let me tell you the story of Ojai, California. It was really just a couple of folks on the ground that lit a fire under everyone around them. One woman in particular who started talking with her fellow commissioners on their environmental commission in Ojai, and they started to talk to other elected officials and to their neighbors and their friends and everyone else. And it's a very small town, which often helps, frankly. When you have less than 8,000 people to get to, you can make things happen pretty quickly. And by golly, they did really fast. In a matter of months, they went from this nugget of an idea to passing an all-electric code. Pretty impressive.
These actions by local governments have not gone unopposed. When Brookline, Massachusetts adopted a natural gas ban, developers and gas utilities took them to court and won. Santa Rosa, home of the Advanced Energy Center, passed an all-electric REACH code in 2019 and was sued by a big developer, but the judge found in favor of the city. The case is now under appeal.
The natural gas industry has gotten 19 state legislatures to ban local natural gas bans. But like dandelions growing up through cracks in the pavement, local actions are building up to a groundswell of support for statewide changes.
That's what happened in California with the last update of the state's energy code.
What's fascinating about this process is that not only was it a handful of the 50 jurisdictions who were speaking out when it came to the state code, but then on top of that, the army of advocates who have come to really be passionate about this topic over the course of the last 2.5 years where each and every one of these cities was undergoing adoption, there has been just an outpouring of people from all walks of life who are really excited about something that's tangible that can make a difference with regard to greenhouse gas emissions. And those folks very vocally, very actively got involved at the state level. This was pretty exciting for someone like me who plays with building codes all day to have people care about it.
It was a pretty broad alliance.
a lot of the environmental community, architects, the American Institute for Architects was very involved, and public health advocates. Affordable housing developers are also on the list. A lot of their funding is triggered on how efficient their buildings are. And so they're actually some of the leading entities developing all electric already because of the reduced operating costs over the course of the building life.
The result was not the all-electric code that advocates were calling for, but a combination of requirements that tips the scale in that direction.
Starting in January 2023, new low-rise homes in California will either need to have at least one heat pump for heat or hot water, or meet stricter energy efficiency requirements and stronger ventilation standards for gas stoves.
And since all new homes must be electric ready and have solar panels, mixed fuel homes will now cost more to build and operate than all electric ones.
Some analysts think these code changes may cause as many as 80% of new homes in California to be built without gas hookups. One other thing the heat pump requirement will do is address a big barrier to electrification that Chad alluded to earlier, contractors.
In little over a year, installation of heat pumps and heat pump hot water heaters will be required knowledge for contractors working on new construction. To look further into the contractor issue, we talked with Larry Waters, an HVAC contractor whose area of expertise is taking on the truly monstrous challenge of electrifying older buildings. Keeping gas out of new construction is important to stop perpetuating the problem. But most of the buildings that will be standing in 2050 are already here. To get to zero emissions from buildings by 2050, the U.S. must decarbonize 5 million buildings a year.
Larry installed his first heat pump in a small house where space was so tight the only gas heating option was an inefficient furnace on the roof. Adding insulation and more efficient windows reduced the size of the unit needed, but not enough to bring the furnace indoors. He had recently learned that heat pumps have a very small indoor footprint.
So I said, hey, I'm going to try one of those units that can fit in little places. And we put 10 solar panels up and we completely eliminated her heating and cooling costs. When we saw how that all worked, my guys that installed it got super excited about it. I got really super excited about it. And I just started offering this solution to everybody.
Larry ended up starting his own business called Electrify My Home, which is focused on decarbonizing existing homes with that same combination of efficiency, electrification, and solar energy. He's actually a lot like Chad. When Larry talks about his work, he uses the word passion.
Larry agrees that contractors are the missing link.
We need to electrify 10 million homes in California in the next 15 years. Here at my little company, we're doing about 50 a year. I could do twice as many if I could find the people to do them. But what we need to do is we need to get hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of contractors on board.
Part of the problem is a chronic workforce shortage in the field.
The workforce is a huge problem. We've steered people away from trades for the last two decades. So the HVAC industry has been short hundreds of thousands of positions over the years.
That means the contractors who are here are busy, with not much time or inclination to learn something new. There's also the old dog new tricks issue. The average age of an HVAC contractor in the U.S. is 55.
There will be a point in California where you won't be able to buy a gas furnace at a supply house anymore. And you know what's going to happen? People are going to go out of state to buy a new gas furnace. Instead of embracing the change and doing what we need to do, there are going to be a certain amount of people that want to do it the old way. And there's also going to be a lot of people in the HVAC industry that have been in the trade for a long time that just throw up their hands and say, I'm done, right?
That would be bad since there's already a shortage. Larry's been working with a decarbonization coalition to get those contractors on board. There's a lot for them to learn. Because with a retrofit, you can't just chop out the old part and stitch it a new one. You have to think about how all the pieces are going to fit together.
It's not cookie cutter. You can't go out and find some problem with someone's furnace and sell them a new electrification system while you're there working on the furnace. That's the way the industry has gone. Then it's really, really just about selling a new system to the customer. For what we're trying to do, there's going to have to be some thinking on how we can change all of that. Most houses in California have a gas furnace, gas water heater, gas stove. Some of them have a gas dryer. These are all electrical loads that need to be added to the customer's home.
Most older houses have 100 amp electrical panels. Without a whole house approach, electrical demand can easily exceed supply. Fixing that problem costs thousands of dollars.
And so if we do some of these wrong, especially the heat pump, the big one, that can take up a lot of space in the breaker box and really drive the cost of the project up and the complication. A traditional heat pump system can use up to 70 amps and 6 breaker spaces. When I address the envelope of the house and I make the house perform better, I can put a much smaller system in. And typically the systems we install only take 1 double pole breaker space. So I'm running the entire system off of 2 spaces instead of 6 spaces. If we put the right products in the house, we can do it mostly with a customer's existing utility panel. If we do this wrong and we put a system in that uses 4 times as much energy, not only will the outcome not be good for the customer's experience, but it's also going to put a much higher load on the grid.
So the best way to stay within that amp budget and keep the electric bill down is to insulate and seal air leaks first so you can use a smaller heat pump. That takes time, and so does running new electrical circuits.
But usually furnaces and water heaters get replaced when they die. And when someone's without heat and hot water, they aren't going to want to wait. There's a lot of pressure to just put in another gas appliance.
You hit the nail right on the head. I have a customer that's waiting to do a full electrification project on her house till after getting the bathrooms remodeled. Well, yesterday she called me and told me that her water heater is now leaking all over the garage floor. We have an extra gas water heater that we keep around just for this situation, and we're going to pop our emergency replacement gas water heater in there to get her up and running again, because it takes a little bit of planning. We have to run an electrical circuit, but I can't go put this water heater in for free, so she's going to pay a little extra to get the water heater put in and then take it out later to put the other one in. This is indicative of the problem. With electrification, we really need a little bit of planning. And then we also have to think about the massive amount of rental houses there are. How is it a benefit for the landlord to electrify their rental houses?
Yeah, there's no incentive if they're not paying the utility bill.
There are a number of solutions in the works.
Some cities are adopting energy efficiency standards for rental units, a move that will reduce the energy burden for low-income tenants.
Heat pump manufacturers are coming out with 120-volt versions, which plug into existing outlets and use less electricity.
The U.S. Department of Energy is investing $50 million to expand the HVAC workforce.
And Larry is doing his part, teaching courses for contractors in California as part of an initiative financed with cap-and-trade funds.
It really goes deep into the why is this all happening. I think it's really important before you train anybody on how, they should understand why. How to execute the process, what type of equipment they should use in particular applications, how to communicate to the customer so the customer understands. And then there's just really a lot of hands-on.
One ray of sunshine is the caliber of younger folks entering the trade and their enthusiasm for decarbonization.
I have some really great young guys working for me that are super excited about what we're doing. There's a lot of really, really smart young people in this trade.
To join them, you don't even need formal training.
40 years ago, I went to air conditioning school, but there's so much available online now. You can get enough training to get going if you're slightly mechanically inclined. You come into my office and you looked at my website and you understand what we're doing and maybe you picked up a couple of trainings online, I'm going to hire you. If people are passionate, they'll get the opportunities. Guys like myself will put them to work right away. And I will share whatever kind of wisdom I can with anybody that's interested in coming up in the trade.
We need to do more than scattershot electrification if we really want to kiss our gas goodbye. What about going neighborhood by neighborhood? And if those who can do electrify, how do we keep the expense of an aging gas distribution system from falling on a shrinking pool of low-income customers? We're exploring the answers to these questions, and we'll report back in part 2.
I'm Brian Curtis.
And I'm Wendy Ring. Thanks for joining us for Cool Solutions.
And thanks to our guests, Mac Lajowski, Chad Assay, Amy Ryder, and Larry Waters.
And to Scott Holmes, David Heilowitz, and Ross Bugden for our music. Want more Cool Solutions? We've got 4 years of stories you can find on our podcast.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. Also heard at Translator K220HR Hood River at 91.9 FM and Translator K282BH in Philomath at 104.3 FM. and we're streaming at the top of our lungs.
Welcome to Film at 11 here on Community Radio, KBOO Portland. Today we have a quick roundup of new films and two or three classics. First off, here's a quick tour of some recent films.
We used to be able to get into a room with the enemy. Now they're just floating in the ether.
If we don't do this, there will be nothing left to save.
No Time to Die, in theaters from MGM, Columbia, and elsewhere in the world, Universal, is directed by Cary Joji Fukunaga, most famous, I guess, for HBO's True Detective, written by Neil Purvis and Robert Wade, who write most of the Bond movies, this time joined by Fukunaga and Phoebe Waller-Bridge. The cast includes, for the fifth time, Daniel Craig, Lea Seydoux, Remy Malek, Lashana Lynch as the new 007, Ralph Fiennes as M, Ben Whishaw as Q, which, by the way, stands for Quartermaster, Jeffrey Wright as Felix Leiter, Christoph Waltz as Blofeld, Ana de Armas of Knives Out as a agent Bond meets in Cuba. So the premise is that Bond has left active service and is living in Jamaica, but he's approached by his old CIA friend, Leiter, asking for help on a mission, which is to kidnap a scientist who has been making something called nanobots that have a peculiar way of killing others without destroying the host. It gets a lot more complicated than that. But it's rather startling to realize that Daniel Craig has made only 5 James Bond films. 8 films, Moore made 7, and Brosnan made 4. But in this modern age of over-advertising and the internet, Craig's presence is much larger. His casting was a response to the success of the Bourne series and other spy films, and they're less cartoonish than the Roger Moores. But the Craig Bond